Welcome to This Week in Craft Beer, the podcast, a weekly show where we interview the people making the magic happen in the UK craft beer scene, sponsored by Beer Nuts, premium crunchy coated peanuts for beer. This Week in Craft Beer publishes the UK's leading craft beer newsletter every Monday morning by email. To subscribe for free, please visit our website at thisweekincraft.beer. So it's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Johnny from Pipeline Brewing, based in St. Agnes in North Cornwall. Opened in the summer of 2018, Pipeline Brewing Co. crafts small batches of vibrant, hoppy, juicy beers using fresh ingredients and Cornish water. They create craft beers that showcase the best of New World hops. Johnny, please introduce yourself and then tell me about your beer journey that led you to start Pipeline in St. Agnes 2 years ago.
Yeah, hi Rob. Yeah, like you say, Johnny Cooper. I'm the founder of Pipeline Brewing Co. up in St. Agnes. There's another brewery here called the Driftwood, which people might have heard of, but they're very much traditional beers from those guys. So we're the only craft brewery in St. Agnes. Not that it's a very big place. It grows certainly in the summer when the tourists come, but during the winter it's quite a sleepy little Cornish village, you know. So yeah, I'm the founder of that, and I do all the brewing, do most of the work really, to be honest. I've got help with sales from Will, who's come on board lately. He's been great help. But yeah, it's basically all down to me to do all the marketing, all the sales, to begin with, you know, go and speak to the bottle shops, meet the guys on the other end of the beer, you know. That's partly what it's all about. I think it's such a social business. If you don't get involved in that, you're kind of missing out.
Definitely.
It's a hard working job, but it's certainly a good one to do.
So what's your backstory, Johnny? How did you end up in 2018 starting Pipeline?
Yeah, it probably goes back further than that, Robert. My main career has been in the building trade. I've been a building contractor for many years, building houses and extensions for people. But brewing's been part of my hobby life for the past probably 12, 15 years.
Right.
Inspired by the American beers. Some of the beers that were being produced over there were streets and streets ahead of what you could get here. So anyone that was ever going over to the States would quickly blag a few cans off or bottles as it was back then, just to bring them over to see what those guys were doing. Because the beers, there wasn't any craft beer here really. People were experimenting with a few beers, but you just couldn't get the beers that I really wanted to be drinking. So I thought, hell, I'm going to learn how to do this. A friend gave me a kit. It was a tin. I can't remember what the name of it was. Boiled it up on the stove. And come 6 weeks later, this miracle had happened in a bottle. We cracked it open and, my God, it was awful. It was the shit beer you could ever have had, man. It was so, so bad. Really, truly was. So that kind of started it for me. So, well, why was that bad? Why did it go wrong? What happened? And that's what brewing good beer is. Finding out from your mistakes what's gone wrong. And just being really super scientific about it. And being extremely anal and perfectionist. I think you ask to any brewer, is this beer perfect? I'll be ever so surprised if someone will say, yes, it's perfect. I think they just always come in and go, I could just do this, I could just do that. And that's the big attraction for me. And it always was. So I started to do some small batch brews at home, only in the 25 litres. And they were going really well. My mates were coming around and drinking more of it than me. Obviously, I was doing something right. Got asked to enter a few competitions along the way, so started doing that. Very reluctantly, because I'm not really one to blow my own trumpets. I'd rather other people kind of appreciate the beers and do all the shouting, you know. I'm not too big-headed, but entered a few competitions and found myself doing very well out of them, you know, if not winning, coming very close to best in show price. Well, I must be onto something here. But how the hell do you turn that into a business, you know? That's, for me, it's probably been the difficult part. So
right.
I've got a career that really is full-time. You know, you're working 9 to 5 physical work. By the time you come home, you're knackered. So it was very much burning the candle at both ends to turn them both into something I could turn into business. It's been the hardest part. But I'm happy to say that by the end of this month, coming into next month, I'm going to be pretty much full-time brewing.
So up until now, you're still only running this part-time, are you, Johnny?
Yeah, I was on a building site today, laying some stone, just finishing off an extension that's coming to the end, and that's the final hurrah. So yeah. Yeah, it is still part-time, but they're both full-time jobs, so really, I don't know how many hours I spend
on one
on the other. But that's the great joy of having it where I live. I can just pop in and pop out. I'm not sure whether you knew that, but it's in a converted garage in where I live. The reason we bought the place many years back was the size of the garage here. The bloke who built the house built this garage to build an airplane in. It's quite some garage. I walked in there, let's buy this house. I mean, she was more interested in the garden, but I was totally thinking, wow, this could be good. So yeah, I've split it in half, and half of it is still workshop machinery, and the other half is all sealed off, and it's the brewery side of things.
Wow. I mean, you hear about people brewing in their garages, but you're usually picturing a car-sized garage, not a sort of an industrial space like it sounds like you got there.
It's yeah, you can probably fit about three buses in here. But you know, it's where I live, and it's not ideal. It's, downside to that is it's private, really. You can't have too many people coming up and seeing you. It's time to move, and thankfully we've found a space.
Yes.
Literally 300 yards up the road, which has just been built, and they're just finishing off now. So we're moving in there in a month. Cannot wait.
Fantastic.
Yeah, long time coming, eh?
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary what you've achieved to date, really, literally as a part-time activity, notwithstanding the fact that I'm sure you're probably doing 40 hours on this and 40 hours on the building, you know, and it's...
Yeah.
But even still, it's quite something.
Well, when you're passionate about something, I think it's easier to find the time. If it's something you're really not asked to be doing and it's just paying the bills, I don't think you're going to put in that same commitment or maybe put the same level of effort into it, perhaps. I'd actually love doing my other job as well. I'm really lucky. It's such a rare thing. Turn two careers into things I love doing, but it's physically too hard to do them both. I think
you
can only do it for a little while before something has to give. And for me, it's the building work. I've come to the time that the brewery has built itself up a decent enough reputation that I'm really sure I could make a great go of it.
Turn it
into a proper career.
Certainly. Before we get any further, let's talk about this first beer, Johnny. Mind Over Matter, 6% IPA, hopped with Simcoe, Citra and Galaxy. I think it's a lovely grapefruit flavours for me, I think.
Definitely got some grapefruit coming through.
Super soft mouthfeel, nice residual bitterness. So really lovely balance of flavour and body, just terrific. And I can't fail to comment on the can art, which is absolutely brilliant as well. It's quite a disturbing image on the can. Would attract your attention on a shelf if your beers were ever lasting on a shelf long enough for anybody to see them, which I don't think they do, but you know.
Oh, thanks, mate. Yeah, well, the artwork is something that it's a joy to behold. I'm as surprised when I see it as you are. It does look stunning, doesn't it? It's all down to a friend of mine, Kieran. He's quite shy about the whole thing. He doesn't want any recognition for what he does. He's just happy to do it because he wants to see the business grow. He's a talented guy. He's a graphic designer, and he comes up with these most amazing images, which I think Mind Over Matter, the guy standing there with, you can't see it all because there's a banner on there, but I think there's some sparks coming out of his hand on these wires that are in front of his eyes.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So he's burning up the cables on that one. You're right. It is. We were talking about a beer earlier, the All Eyes on You. I've got so many comments back on that one because that had an eye that was even bigger than these ones
in
the middle, just staring back at you from the shelf. It was so intense. Drew you in, and if you look closely into the eye, you can see a guy stood there taking the picture. So it's got such depth to these images. It just draws you in. I mean, I probably get a little bit too lost in them because I'm looking at them all the time. But yeah, it's a great place to have a bit of art, you know, on a can. Why not?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you've obviously got quite a significant canvas to work with there as well, haven't you, on a can as opposed to sort of a traditional bottle label. And so, yeah, I think breweries that don't take advantage of that are really missing a trick.
No, absolutely. It's totally a little playground for you to show off on, I think, if you're that way inclined, you know.
Where does this beer fit in your grand plan? Is this really representative, you would say, of your style?
It's a pretty good indicator of the kind of beer you're going to expect if you open a can of Pipeline. Those big, bold flavours and the soft mouthfeel. Mm-hmm. The water down here is so nice to brew with for this style. It's so soft.
Right.
Lovely flavour to the water, if you like. It's not harsh. You don't get much astringency from it. So, yeah, I think the water's got a huge part to play.
That really helps, yeah.
But, yeah, this is where we kind of smash it, is in the mid-ABVs between like 5 and 6.5. I think some of the nicest beers we make fit into that category.
Right.
Really, really drinkable, higher than the strength, but with that bitterness that you suggested at the end that makes you also want to carry on and finish.
It does. It just drives you back for the next mouthful, doesn't it? Or the next can.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes you can make a beer that's a bit too juicy and you miss out on that.
Right.
And by the end of it, you've kind of had enough. But I think by the time you finish this, your mouth's nice and fresh still. You know? That's what we're trying to aim for on these drinkable.
And what I mean... It might be a stupid question, but are you trying to brew a beer that you want people to drink a 4-pack of or several pints of? Are you, or you know, and I know the answer is almost obviously yes, but you do get a sense that quite a lot of brewers these days are sort of aiming for something so remarkable and distinctive, perhaps, that people are going to love it, you know, and it's going to get rave reviews on Instagram and Untappd, but people maybe not going to come back for the next one. And even still, that might be a success if that's what you're trying to achieve. But I get a sense that's not where you're aiming.
No, I think really we want to get as many customers coming back for our beers as we can. don't want to brew something that might ring the bell for one person, and the next person on the line saying, "Oh God, that's disgusting. I'm not going to drink their beers again." I think really the truth of the matter is that I brew beers that I like to drink, which is really selfish, but that's just the way it is. These beers, I love drinking them, so I just keep brewing this kind of beer. And so long as all my customers still carry on liking it, then I'm happy days, you know.
And I think obviously if your tastes align with the market preferences, then you're onto a winner with that strategy. I do hear brewers sometimes say, just brewing to please myself, really. And then you look at their beers and they're not necessarily what people are looking for these days. And so you think, well, you know, maybe you're sort of spiting yourself a bit by taking such an inward looking approach. But I think so long as you're aligned with the market trends, then I think that makes sense. And obviously, you know, you want to brew a beer that you're happy to take home and drink a few of yourself, and as you taste it, that's got to really please you, because that surely inspires you to do better, doesn't it, every time?
Yeah, you know, Rob, when I first started out on this journey, my intention wasn't to go out and make money and turn it into a business. All I really wanted was to see someone drinking a pint of a beer that I'd made down the pub. Someone that doesn't know me stood there drinking a beer going, "Oh, this is great," and ordering another one. That's all that mattered to me when I first started brewing. And as soon as you start seeing that kind of recognition, it's great. It drives you to the next stage, right? What's the next beer I'm going to brew for these guys? What are they going to want? So I just followed my own instincts, really. Brewed the beers that I think, well, what would be nice? And just brew it that way. It turns out that, yeah, these beers are going down a stalk.
Was there a particular beer that tipped you over the edge and suddenly you're off and running? Was there a single beer that you can point to? Or?
Yeah, I think there probably was. I've been buying beers online through Premier Hop, right, into this Instagram thing where they'll list a beer up.
Yep.
And you say, yeah, one for the box.
Yeah, put it in my box. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
great
model, I'm sure you heard of it. It's a brilliant system. It works a treat. So Rohit was following me and I was following him, and he'd seen on my feed that we'd done a canning run of a couple of beers. Hmm. So he straight away got in touch and was, what's this? You get to the canning? Brilliant. Tell me more. We struck up a relationship. So I sent him some cans of Forgotten Dreams, a few cans had gone out to people that were asking for them, and they've just hit the market with a big, wow, who the hell are these guys? This beer's incredible. I was elated that night when he started to see on Instagram
people's opinions, I can't imagine how brilliant that must be. Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah, I was dancing around in the brewery, happy days with it.
Quite sure.
A couple of cans of Forgotten Dreams in my hand. But no, Rohit's been instrumental in that, really. Can't thank him enough. So he pumped the beer out there to the people that wanted it, and it's gone from strength to strength. I think the first order he had was for two cases, and he quickly came back ordering three more. So he sold them out within pretty much an hour of putting them online, I think the first lot went. Nice. So such was the demand for the beer. Which took me completely by surprise. It was phenomenal, and it's carried on ever since. So good on him. He's a star.
Fantastic. I should have asked you earlier, but what is the size of your current brew kit? Obviously, you'll expand as you move into new premises, but what have you got today?
Today we've got 6 hectolitres, so it's a good size. I think if you're starting out, I'd recommend anyone, if they're starting out, to maybe hedge their bets a little bit and don't go too big to begin with, but have the capacity there from the beginning if you can, so that you can expand into that.
It's such a tough question. You know, you wish you'd have bought 10 or 20 if you could turn the clock back. But I wonder how many breweries have bought a 20 hect kit to start with and failed 6 months later because they overspent and didn't have the runway of cash flow.
Cash flow's something else, isn't it? I think that can ruin any business, no matter how successful you are. Yeah, that's something you really need to keep on top of. But I don't know many breweries that are going to start at 20 and hit the floor running and be an overnight success. I don't think success is built overnight, although it sometimes seems like it is. But there's a lot of work that's gone on behind the scenes, maybe, to build up that position of being in the lucky position of being sought after and in demand. There's plenty of breweries out there that must be wondering, well, why not me? Why are people not liking my beers? What's wrong with my beers? if you allow a little bit of space to grow, I've grown as much as I can in the size that I have.
Yeah.
We're looking at 15-20 hectares. Breweries now.
Nice. Let's pivot and have a chat about how you get your beers to market, Johnny, because you know, I think it's obvious you sort of studiously avoided getting into the web shop game up until this point, preferring to rely on a network of excellent bottle shops and distributors. And so I completely understand why you've done that, but I'd be curious just to sort of get your sense of that.
Yeah, well, we've done that for two reasons. One reason is we wanted to support the bottle shops that have so supported us over the years. I heard a story that there was struggling to find beer from breweries when they were coming into lockdown, really struggling to get stock because the breweries were kind of looking after themselves and selling much more through their own channels, you know, through their web shops, etc. That these poor shops weren't getting the service that they wanted. So I was quite happy to jump in and fill that void, you know. And I think Instagram played a large part in it. People were reviewing our beers quite a bit, got a bit of a buzz about them. So rather than me chasing the sales came chasing us, you know, which is always a great position to be in. But I've tried to keep it as open and honest as I can with everybody. There's a mail list that goes out once a month, given the upcoming releases and what we've got stock availability of. And it's pretty much on a first-come, first-served basis. So you have to kind of accept that there's not enough to go round, but which is something that we're working dramatically behind doors to try and sort out. Hopefully by Christmas we'll have a new brew house. But yeah, we'll talk about that in a sec. But the bottle shops are vast for me. They're such a wealth of knowledge. They've got all these different beers in there. They can have someone walking in off the street that perhaps wouldn't have heard of Pipeline before. So it's up to them almost to sell it on my behalf. And they've been doing just that. They sell out so quickly, some of these bottle shops, that I got a phone call from one guy. It arrived at 10 o'clock that morning, and by 12 o'clock, he'd sold out.
Wow.
So, which is great. He was after more, but of course, he was too late by then. No. He walked out the door, and that was that.
It's nuts, isn't it? I'm familiar with Vessel in Plymouth. I met Sam and Katie, who run Vessel, in the other half tap room in Brooklyn. In 2018, yeah, you know, I was in there on my own and so heard English accents kind of on the table next to me and I got chatting to them. I spent a really pleasant Sunday afternoon with them working our way through the unbelievable list of IPAs they had in other half. A real amazing place. Super nice people. And I'm going down to Plymouth tomorrow, actually, funnily enough. So definitely going to drop in and see them hopefully Wednesday or Thursday this week. They're very, very proactive, aren't they, in the way that they promote their shop. And I know they last couple of years they've run a beer festival as well, haven't they? Obviously that's not happening this year, but really good guys and one of the real sort of shining lights of the independent bottle shop.
They had us in for a meet the brewer event. Then they've had us in a special box as well that they've talked about. They're doing all they can to support the local breweries, which is exactly what we all need to do. We all think we all need to help each other out. That seems to be the best way to get through business, and then you've got a decent conscience, you know you've not screwed anyone else over.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely the way to behave.
Absolutely. It was only when I interviewed Ross Holland from Alpha Delta that I realised what a daunting task it is for a small business to manage mail order at scale. You know, he during lockdown he was literally running the brewery on his own, and yet still trying to stuff cans into boxes and coordinate with the courier to come and pick them up, and then he was getting returns and packages damaged, and it's just an absolute nightmare. So I think within about 3 weeks he'd opened his web shop, sold out his sort of latest canning run, and then shut the web shop down again because it's just too much aggravation. So sooner losing a little bit of profit out of the can sale, but taking that whole avenue of aggravation out of your life, it was worth it to him. And not of course as well the point that you're supporting the distribution as well, which is important.
I think that would be a lot of work if you're super popular and you've got orders for three or four cans of this and that going out, you've got to package each one. I don't know how many orders you're going to get a day on that kind of volume, but you're probably looking at maybe 100 orders a day. You've got to sit there and package and box up and get the labels right. Like you said, there's a lot of work to it. There's a fair amount of work sending it out as it is. So if you're going to double or quadruple that volume, then I think really you need to have something in place to do it. You certainly can't do it on your own.
I guess even from your perspective, you're sending cans out to dozens of different places, aren't you? So workshops. So it's still a significant logistical challenge. I remember her early in lockdown, I heard an interview with Adam at Verdant saying that actually he was really bemoaning the lack of available reliable courier services in Cornwall to come and collect from him and distribute, and that seems again hard to fathom, really. We think we're living in the UK. This is a pretty small, densely populated country that is, from my perspective, living in the southeast. I think that we've all got the sort of same level of service everywhere, and it all works smoothly. But obviously that isn't true in Cornwall. I don't know.
It's a funny one. I remember seeing something about that they were really struggling to post things out. I don't remember which courier it was. It might have been Royal Mail or somebody. I don't know. But yeah, they were definitely struggling. I think they're back on track now. They've got that all sorted.
Yeah.
And then nice new shiny brewery, which I've yet to go and have a look at. We've supposed to be doing some work together pretty soon. They've got the Summer Beer Bash coming up, which
I had tickets for that. Of course,
did you?
You know, yeah. I've tickets for everything, you know.
Of course, yeah.
I don't doubt we'll have been at some of the same places before, but we didn't know each other before. Next time I'll look for you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, but yeah, you'll meet us there. They've invited us to the rerun of it next summer.
Yep.
Which is awesome. Can't wait to go and do that.
You're about less than an hour from there, are you? Probably even, I don't know.
Yeah, probably. In the summer, mind, there's so many tourists around at the minute. Everyone's in Cornwall, I think. So it probably would take you an hour now. But generally, it's only about 20 minutes away. A little flop over to the south coast. Yeah.
Nice. What makes you different as a brewery? What would you say is your unique differentiator? If indeed you have one. It doesn't need to be, because I think you're brewing fantastic examples of superb, juicy IPAs that the market is screaming for right now. So that's perfect in its own right. I'd be curious to get a sense of what you think unique differentiators are.
Wow. It's probably the fact that it's quite rare and it's difficult to get hold of. That's a difficult place to be, because I want to sell more beer, and when you grow you've got more costs involved with that. You've got to sell more beer to cover those costs, so it's catch-22. But definitely growth is the way forward. So whether we'll still occupy that niche position of rare but well sought after beer, I don't know. Hopefully we will. I think Verdant had that same problem when they first started out, talking to Adam years back, that he wasn't selling his beer locally at all. There wasn't much of a market in Cornwall for craft beer.
Right.
Probably still isn't, really. If I looked at my sales figures, I'd say that 85% of my sales are outside of Cornwall.
Right.
And that's basically what they found they had to do, was to post their beers up. And from Bristol onwards, really, was where the craft scene was starting to go. Obviously, now there's quite a market for that all over the country. But still, the local market for craft beer isn't huge. I'd say that Cornwall's a little bit behind on that, partly due to the population size. There's only 750,000 in the winter that occupy this vast area. That swells up to 3.5 million during the summer. Perhaps that's when you're going to get more demand locally. But now you have to post it up the line. I'm not sure whether that's a USB, to be honest, mate.
You know what? Coming back to that, I think it's something that the Aldi have done very skillfully for many years, isn't it? Is limit the supply of cars to, primarily, as I understand it, to maintain the resale value on used cars, but also to sort of boost the cachet of actually owning and driving an Audi. Is people know that actually there's a 5-6 month waiting list on most of those models. So it's, I think that can work. It's a dangerous game, I think, potentially, to play.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's not so dangerous at your scale. I don't think there's huge pent-up demand for your product, and I think you could confidently you can double, treble, quadruple your supply and not probably come close to meeting the demand right now, which is a great place to be.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, it's not something I've set out to be. It's rare and unobtainable. You know, I sell the beer, it's all sold out, and it goes off to as many different people as possible. But like you said, if we had 4 times capacity, I'd probably be able to fulfill those orders and still people wanting more beer. So, yeah.
Pretty sure about that.
Yeah, I think so. At the moment, let's see how that market plays out. Who can tell what's going to happen in 6 months or a year's time if the economy bounces back as they think it will. I'm hoping that beer won't be as affected as other luxury items. I think everybody always likes to have a beer, especially a tasty one. Now, if you've gone down the craft route, I think it'd be difficult to turn your back on that completely.
I think you're right. That's very true. Yeah, it'd be hard to go back to drinking Foster's or whatever John Smith's. I think as well, it's a luxury product. To some extent, you're not trying to sell beer to every man or every woman. You know, you're selling to people that are really seeking it out and are willing to really go out of their way to find it. And so I think it might be a bit more recession resistant than if it was a mid-market product, let's say. I don't know whether that's delusional or not, but this is a theory I've got. I don't know what you think about it.
No, it's been a while since I looked at economics. Did an A-level in economics.
Did you? Oh, well, you know more about it than I do then.
it was a while ago, mate. That's the trouble, isn't it? I think you could be onto something. I'm hoping so, because if you're wrong and this market does get squeezed, you're going to see a lot of breweries failing. It's quite a squeezed market as it is, I think.
Bizarrely,
it seems to have stretched. Instead of like most markets, there's only so much demand. So you've got all these players fighting for the same money. This market seems to have expanded.
It definitely has. You know, I don't know what it represents. I think it was getting up to sort of 50 in the US. It was getting up to 15% of beer sales were craft. Well, I don't think it's as much as that in the UK, but it's certainly grown. It's probably doubled in the last 2 or 3 years, hasn't it?
Yeah,
you know, maybe it's doubled from 5% to 10% of total sales, perhaps. But
which must be hitting the margins of somebody somewhere.
Gotta be. got to be. And, you know,
hopefully,
I
mean, the macros.
Well, I'm quite sure it must be, yeah, which is why they're, so if you can't beat them, join them, isn't it? That seems to have stopped, thank goodness, at the moment. I've been, you know, I'm sort of, I grit my teeth every morning, you know, expecting to see one of the brewers I really care about has sold out, but it hasn't happened yet. But it will, I'm sure, happen again.
Well, let's hope not, because I think it stifles innovation. Really do.
So I was going to come back to the point that if there's going to be some contraction in the market, it's not going to be guys like you selling beers within 2 hours of them hitting the shelves. So I think there's a lot of cask forward brewers that are going to fail before you do. And I'm not celebrating that at all, because I think cask is a wonderful part of our brewing heritage, isn't it? And, you know, and the right place at the right time, and nothing finer than a nice pint of cask beer. Let's take a short break, Johnny. This week in Craft Beer, the podcast is sponsored by Beer Nuts. Beer Nuts is a British company inspired by the European fashion for pairing savoury snacks with different beer styles. Beer Nuts are premium crunchy coated peanuts and come in three great flavours: classic, masala curry and jalapeno. They are packaged in 100% recyclable, plastic-free single serve cans and are vegan friendly. Next day delivery is available from their webshop at beernuts.co.uk, spelled B-I-E-R. Beer Nuts are the ultimate beer pairing snack, perfect for pubs, taprooms, bars, bottle shops and more. For details of a special offer, please see page 7 of our weekly newsletter at thisweekincraft.beer. I'm back with Johnny from Pipeline for the second half. Johnny, you guys are not terribly prolific on Instagram and with your own posts. You get great coverage from everybody else when you release a beer, but in terms of your own account, you don't post that much. What you do post is usually very well photographed, so you put some really nice images out there. But particularly interesting, in the last couple of weeks, you've posted some pictures of a pretty big structure being built that I understand is going to be your new home from next month.
Yeah, that's right, Rob. We're so stoked about that. We've been looking around for a property for so long, and they just aren't available. They really aren't. There's not too many industrial estates in the locality. There's plenty if you go to Redruth or Truro, one of the bigger towns around. But what I really wanted to do is just keep it local.
No, you don't definitely. Have to travel too far to get absolutely. To work.
So yeah, just up the road, there's a small industrial estate that have just built a new unit, which I got a tip off from a mate of mine who's got a unit there already that they were planning it. So I got in there early, probably 9 months ago now, and just started those initial discussions. And with a big long waiting list, managed to get myself to the top of it.
Nice.
It's finally happening. I'll get the keys 1st of October, hopefully get the keys. And then shortly after that, we'll still be brewing off the smaller kit to begin with.
Yeah.
And then get the bigger kit ordered. We're thinking about how we're going to raise the funds. There's probably going to have to be some crowdfunding, and probably take advantage of the low interest rate and get a decent loan.
Absolutely. Good time for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yes, it is. It's probably a risk, but we've done our sums and I think we can make it work.
Well, I think you'd have some goodwill to tap into for crowdfunding as well, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, I'm no expert on the subject, but I think I would expect that to go pretty well. Obviously, it depends how you frame it. And
I'm no expert on that either. I've not done it before, but I've been in chats with the guys from crowdfunder and they've been a great help so far. They're willing to give me a bit of extra support if I need it, with it being, because crowdfunder, I didn't know, but it's based in Newquay, just down the road.
Oh, that's handy.
So the CEO gave me some of his time, which was magnificent, really. Who'd have thought a CEO of a multi-million pound company like that would be prepared to give me a couple of hours of his time?
Nice.
But it seems that beer is one of those industries that it's so collaborative and people so emotional about beer, really. It's an emotional product. So if you've got a good product, it opens a lot of doors.
It really does, as you say. People aren't, very few people are indifferent about beer, are they? If people are fans of your beer, then they're, you know, rabid, passionate fans, and that's a good customer base to have.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be applauded. And that's the great thing. It's such a diverse scene, isn't it? There's such a gamut of different beer styles across the market to choose from.
Well, there certainly are these days,
Beer. Yeah, exactly.
So it looks like you've got space there for a tap room as well as a brewery?
Yeah, that's the plan. Tap room, do it on a Friday and a Saturday night to begin with. Mm-hmm. During the summer months, probably open it a bit more often because there'll be more people around. But yeah, get a tap room going. You know? It's something that I see a lot of breweries using that as their business model, and it seems that by far the best model. You get to see your customers, you get that instant feedback.
Everybody's getting the beer in perfect condition. Obviously, profit margins are better. But, you know, above all, being in a sort of holiday central for 6 months of the year there, I would hope that you could generate some really good summer business there. And, you know, and you say maybe Cornwall isn't a great craft beer market, but 2.5 million tourists who come down your way in the summer are going to be seeking you out, aren't they? You know, because there's going to be plenty that that know about you and know about Verdant, and people are going to be starting to put together a little sort of, you know, Southwest beer tour, aren't they? I suspect.
Yeah, I saw someone doing a post the other day. Someone posted just the other day exactly that, a craft beer tour of Cornwall. And they had Pasto in there, Black Flag, Sales, Verdant. I can't remember who else was in there, but yeah, it was a great little write-up. So yeah, hoping that we can service that bit of the market. There's quite a bit of investment coming into Cornwall pretty soon. They're widening what is currently a single carriageway, the last little bit of the A30. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're going to dual carriageway that. And part of those works is putting in a cycle path network from Perranporth to St Agnes and across into Truro.
Oh, nice.
And that's going to connect up with some existing cycleways that are there. And the position of our tap room just happens to be at the start of one of these cycle routes, and there's a bus stop there too, so I think that's going to really help people either do it before they go on the bike ride, or perhaps choose to do it afterwards when they've earned it, you know.
Are you figuring to open this year, or are you going to leave it till the spring?
I'd like to be open for Christmas, but it's going to be dependent on what the situation and how it pans out with kids going back to school. Might find that we have to go back into localised lockdowns. So I noticed up in Manchester they've had a bit of that. I wouldn't be surprised if that seems to be the way that things will go over the winter. So we just have to play that one by ear, but we're hoping to be open by Christmas. Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be ideal. And, you know, all the other businesses will probably have closed at 5 and gone home, or maybe come to the tap room.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They'll close at 5 and they'll come and join you. Yeah.
I think we're quite a popular addition to the scheme of things up there. I've had quite a lot of
pop-ups you will be.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be awesome.
Let's open this next beer, Johnny. It's not doing any good in the can.
Shake mine up a bit. It's a little bit lively.
Yeah, it's a decent level of carbonation in it, which is nice. I like. I think New England IPAs can slew a bit the other way. To my mind, these days they're often undercarbonated.
Yeah. It certainly gets a nice big fluffy head on it. And I got it in a glass. I'll tell the truth. I'm drinking it out of a Stella glass.
So I won't judge.
Which I get completely lambasted for not having the right glassware for the right beers.
So let me see if I can do.
Probably something that we're going to do as part of that crowdfunder. So if people want to get some branded glassware, that's probably a good place.
I think they're flying off the shelves. Yeah, definitely. I think that you won't have any trouble shifting some glassware. Johnny, this is Monster Wave, 6% New England IPA, collab with Little Monster in Chichester, who are not too far from me. I'm in Reading. Mosaic, Citra, and El Dorado.
We brewed this one together. Again, it's another virtual collab, which is a bit of a trend going on here with the beers, isn't there, the collabs I'm doing. But brewed this one here. So me and Brendan got together on Zoom and had a good old chinwag, put the world to rights, and came up with a recipe, and we chose the hops together. I think the hopping rates were pretty much unspoken about, because I'm always going to put a shit ton of hops in there. but not so many that it's going to fuck it up. You know, you've got to have some balance, but just put the right amount of hops in at the right time, and you're going to get that proper neeper flavour profile, you know, soft pillowy mouthfeel to go with it.
It's absolutely delicious as far as I'm concerned. This is right in my wheelhouse. Beautiful example of a superb tropical New England IPA, as you said. And I think the carbonation is really pleasing me, actually. It's that gives it another dimension of mouthfeel, doesn't it? Which
Yeah, absolutely it does. It makes it just effervesce, all those aromas. Right. You as soon as you put your nose inside the glass, unless you're covered in foam, you're just going to get all of those flavours poking up your nose. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, it's turned out really well, this beer. We sent 10 cases up to Cloudwater for one of their online events. They were doing a special event on, I think it was Epicurean and Premier Hob. So they're the bottle shop side of things. I'm just working out how it's been for them during the lockdown. And Rohit, bless him, had chosen us as his featured brewery.
Oh, nice.
So it just so happened that we could, between us, me and Little Monster, could rustle up enough cases out of our already meagre allotment
depleted
to
stock,
send 10 cases up to Cloudwater. So, yeah, they had it as part of one of their weekly boxes and got some great feedback off the Cloudwater fans as well, that they were loving the beer. So it was a good timing, really, for us, that we could have a beer that we could push out there, which pretty much says everything you want to know about Pipeline, you know, a juicy, hop-forward beer, nice mouthfeel, smashable, not an 8% deeper this time, which we do enjoy brewing, of course, but this one's eminently drinkable.
It really is. It's absolutely delicious. What can we expect to see from you for the remainder of 2020 in terms of beer releases, styles?
Well, we're going to be really concentrating on getting this tap room up and running and expanding the brewery size. So I don't think you're going to expect to see too many groundbreaking new beers from us. I think we're going to probably rebrew some of our past favourites. We've obviously got two sides to this business now. We're trying to expand what we've already got, but also continue brewing for the customers that we have, which is going to be the tricky part, I think. I don't want to go offline for a couple of months whilst we're expanding the brewery and changing it around. I don't think that would be beneficial at all. So there's going to be a crossover period, and hopefully that will all go smoothly and everything will fit in nicely and no one will notice the difference. But in the real world, it's, when does that ever happen? You know, we're optimistic that we can pull this off. So beers-wise, I think you're probably going to see New England IPA styles, double IPAs. We're probably going to start putting some dark beers on the market as well, because I've been nagged by loads of my mates to brew some dark beers.
Right.
We're coming into winter. I think that's probably got more of a place. Dark beers aren't something that we're known for at all. But I'm pretty sure we could brew a decent one if we put our mind to it.
I'm sure you could, yeah. Yep.
There is a kind of a balance between people saying what they'd like me to brew and what I'd actually like to brew and will be successful at brewing. So it is with caution that we go ahead and decide to do a beer style. I think a sour is a long way off because it's not a beer that I like to drink. I've tried really hard to like them, but it's just not a style that I've fully got into yet. Triple fruited goes, I think, is probably as far as I'll go.
Right.
And absolutely love those. So yeah, I could see one of those perhaps being on the cards, but that might be more of a collaboration beer because I've not brewed one yet. So
makes a messier kit as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and get someone else to clean it. That'd be lovely.
Are you guys, from the moment that you started canning, which I think, as far as I could track it back, was November last year? Was that right? I mean, you had beer in bottles prior to that,
right.
But you quickly hit the ground running on Instagram, and I'm sure that you had some level of visibility prior to that. But as you say, with the support of Rohit as well at Premier Hop, you've built a real strong reputation now on Instagram. And looking at Untappd this afternoon, you're now ranked 7th in England amongst all craft breweries by average rating, which is a wonderful achievement.
Yeah, we're very proud of that. That says a lot to me, because 99% of the people that are rating my beers on Untappd, I don't know. There's one or two people that I've friended over the years, but I'd rather they be honest than just give me a nice, oh yeah, that was a lovely beer, rate it highly, but actually think worse of it. I love the fact that you can be honest and slightly anonymous on Untappd. So I think that gives you a fair, probably more honest opinion from people.
It does. I think you can drive yourself to distraction, I'm sure, by scrolling through every day, looking at your reviews and your ratings and getting cross when somebody said, oh, I don't like New England IPA, so this is only a 2 out of 5, or, this was too bitter, or this is too strong, or whatever. You know, I think it can be very frustrating, I'm sure, when people rate things poorly due to the fact that they don't like the style. But, you know, hopefully, you know, it averages out, doesn't it? And I think it's, it'd be curious to know how much sort of time and credence you give it. You know, is it something that you look at often?
Yeah, I do. I really rate it as a feedback platform for a brewery. I think ignore it at your peril. Mm-hmm. We had a chap that bought some beer. I can't remember where he was, Norway or Sweden, but he posted about the beer that he didn't like it. And looking at the picture, it didn't look like it was particularly great either. It had a lot of hop debris in it. So something that got through one of the screens on the canning. It was either the first or the last can off the run. And I was horrified to see this. So I got in touch with a guy and said, oh, look, I'm really sorry. What can we do to help you out? Can you give us your address? We'll get some more beer out to you. Which, of course, he was more than happy for us to send more beer out to him. Mm. And after that, he's a raging convert, loves Pipeline, can't get enough of it, and really appreciated the fact that we'd reached out to him rather than the other way around. So I think if you find there's a problem with one of your beers, it's how you deal with it that you judge them eventually. I think that's right.
You know, and as you say, it's a rare opportunity which your business has that you can have that direct contact with such a broad range of your customers. You know, most businesses are only in touch with a very small percentage of their, you know, consumer products, I'm talking about, of course. You know, most consumer product businesses don't have that level of direct customer contact. And so, as you say, if you can manage it well and leverage it, then that's a brilliant opportunity that you have to make those kind of contacts and turn people into advocates.
Yeah, and I do love seeing people's joy of finding a beer, a new brewery, and going, wow, great brewery, new one for me, and another Pipeline convert, happy to say. But yeah, it's just nice to see people enjoying beer, whether it's our beer or anyone else's. You know, it is nice. It's a social thing, isn't it, beer? So if you can't do it face-to-face. That's the next best thing.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we've been robbed of the opportunity to do much of that at festivals and tap takeovers and meet the brewers and whatever this year. But you can still, there's still ways and means of building out that network.
Yeah, we just entered Raise the Bar as well. We put four cracking beers into that, just ready to post them, and this happened. So that got cancelled and then they never got sent. But I was really thinking great things for this year, thinking that an up-and-coming brewery, you're going to hopefully get some exposure if you can get into the beer festivals that they put on. Yep. It's a totally different market that we could jump into. So, yeah, I was hoping that this would be the year that we could go and do Hop City and Friends and Family and all the other ones that are just so well-run, so brilliant.
Friends and Family was... Did you get to Friends and Family as a...
No, I was as a working punter, that weekend, sadly.
Unbelievable.
No. Next year, if it's on, I'm going, definitely.
The greatest day's drinking ever. You know, it's just, I don't mean that doesn't come across very well. I could have maybe phrased that better, but it was just an amazing experience. You know, so many wonderful breweries and incredible beers in one big hall and a lovely atmosphere, super friendly. Nobody getting out of order at all, as far as I could see. It was just a lovely, friendly, happy day of drinking beers from most of the greatest breweries on the planet. So,
But
best £60 I've ever spent, to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I can remember going to the very first Verdant little summer beer bash. I took the wife and the kids, and within half an hour, they were bored stiff. You know? Oh, God. All these guys with beards talking about beer, but I was just wide-eyed and in my element. I was absolutely loving it. It was great. Adam was kind enough to show me around the brewery as well and give me a few tips on fermenter sizes, because I was pretty along the pathway of, I knew I was going to be starting the brewery soon.
Right.
But it was just, I was in my element. It was so, so good. Just everybody's keen to talk about beer and drink beer and enjoy beer, but nobody's there to get smashed and just have a leery time. It's so nice at a festival. It's so much nicer than your average Saturday night down at the pub, which, let's face it, can be pretty horrific. A pretty horrific experience.
It can be. Yep.
Yeah.
Not so much in tap rooms, though, I don't think. Which is
No, absolutely. Not in our tap room, that's for sure.
No. Let's talk about hops. Talking to some of the smaller brewers that I've spoken to in the last few weeks for this podcast, it's interesting, and I hadn't really considered this from the outside looking in, actually how scarce some of the more fashionable hops are and how difficult it is to come by them without the purchasing history and an established year-to-year contract with one of the big suppliers. So how have you dealt with that this year? You seem to be getting hold of some great hops from the beers that I've tasted. Have you got a single hop merchant, and you know, and how are you able to get things like Strata and Galaxy, or are you making do with what you can get?
I've got a fair few suppliers for hops. There's Charles Farram.
Yep.
Simply Hops to spot hops. Brookhouse is probably my go-to for hops. Been dealing with them for quite a while. Their quality is superb, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's important to me isn't so much the price of the hops, which evidently is important, but it's just the quality of the hop.
Yep.
And I found that some of the ones that I was buying on spot weren't the best quality, and it made me start to question why they were becoming available on spot contracts when they're so elusive and so difficult to get hold of.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's because they're not quite as good as they ought to be.
No.
We've certainly made a beer or two that haven't lived up to our expectations, which have not been released because of poor hops.
Wow, that's disappointing, yeah.
Yeah, it's oxidation and beta acids, we worked it out. It took a lot of sort of thinking on what the problem actually was. When you come across a problem that you're not really aware of the roots of it, you have to track back through your process and try and find out what it was. And I'm pretty sure it's oxidated beta acids that just give an overriding bitterness to the end of the beer. I do like putting a fair bit of bitterness in the beers. We talked about that earlier, just getting drinkability.
Definitely.
This was overridingly just astringent and not the best. So what we tend to do is just only buy hops that are in season right now.
Right.
So if you're getting a New Zealand harvest, you just try and get as much New Zealand hops as you can and when it comes available. We managed to secure some Galaxy, which is superb. It's a difficult hop to use. It's quite dominant. It's in that first beer that we drank earlier.
Right.
And I think give it another week and it'll calm down again, but it certainly stays quite punchy
for
the first three or four weeks in the can until it gently mellows down after that and you get a different flavour profile from Galaxy. It's an interesting hop. I like it, and along with Nelson, it's another great hop.
Yeah,
the rarity of it means that we don't get to brew with it all year round, so it will just be a seasonal release for us. We just go with the seasons. I think that's that seems to be working for a lot of things we do. We've got an allotment that we've been eating veg all summer from. It's just been really nice to just go with whatever seasonal things there are to eat. So if you can mirror that with your beers, you could be on something.
But I guess that might work at the modest production scale you've got at the moment. But when you've got the bigger kit in next year, it's going to be, you're going to need to be a bit more forward thinking, perhaps, are you, in what you need and where you're going to get
it? Yeah, we set up some contracts now with Yakima Chief Hops. They've got quite a lot of varieties available. So right. we've got our in there. But it doesn't mean to say that I won't still be buying hops from Brookhouse and the likes as and when they become available. Because they've served us well. No reason why we shouldn't carry on buying their excellent products. But it has historically been quite difficult to get hold of the more trendy varieties. Idaho 7 was a tricky one when that first came out.
Yep.
Strata, yeah. That's like Rocking Horse shit as well.
That's not Yakima, is it? That's exclusive to who's got Strata. It's not them, is it? It's something. I was reading the blog about it this week. There's another US hop merchant that has Strata as an exclusive, I think, don't they?
Okay. Well, I get offered it from other merchants, but so far I just haven't bothered to try and track it down. If it's that elusive to get, then just let it go for now. Some will find me as and when, I guess.
The beauty of it is there's dozens of great hops, aren't there? You know, and I don't think the absence of one or two is not going to stop you brewing great beer, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, quite. There's some amazing hops out there still. Yeah. I think the reason that new variety of hops get so much clamour is that they might be offering something different. So that if you've never had that hop before, perhaps you'll get a different flavour profile than you've ever had before. So I can see why innovation is necessary in the hop market, but there are some great hops. We just brewed a single hop mosaic for a local bottle shop as an exclusive for their crowdfunder, which I'm happy to say they made their money and they're going to be opening a new tasting room, etc., around the corner. Red Elephant in Truro, if you've heard of them.
Oh, great. No, I haven't, but that's excellent. Yeah, good.
Yeah, so we brewed a single hop mosaic with them, and mosaic is such a versatile hop.
I think mosaic works beautifully in a single hop.
Yeah, you know, it's probably one of the best for single hops, whereas Centennial probably isn't. Mix something else in with that.
It's how bitter you like your beer, isn't it? But
quite.
I think the fact is that everybody's always looking for the next new thing, aren't they? That this is part of the wonder of craft beer, and that's, you know, obviously something that you're benefiting from, as you were saying. People say, oh, wow, where have these guys come from? You know, this is wonderful. And so, you know, I think that the whole new hop thing plays into that as well, doesn't it? People want to drink the new next big thing from the new brewery, and they also want to drink the next big hop, you know, because it's... Even if it's no different to everything else that's out there, it's still new. So we've got to have it, and we need it now.
Yeah, well, that's fine. There's always a place in the market for people that want a one-off and tick that box, right, on to the next.
Yep.
You know, I think there's a fair bit that goes on. I'm sure that the people that will buy one particular pipeline beer, but they won't buy that same release again. They'll just wait for the next release to come out, and they'll buy one of those. Maybe in 6 months' time, when it comes on the market again, they'll buy it again.
I think I was guilty of that myself a bit. I think I've grown up a bit in my drinking the last couple of years, but I definitely was, you know, in that school of thought that said, I've got to, you know, it's a Pokemon thing. You got to drink them all. You got to taste them all. And once you had it once, then I think I've got beyond that now. At least I hope so.
Well, hopefully you'll go back to those beers that really did it for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if there's a one that becomes available all year round, it goes into somebody's core. Like Sharks was a verdant beer that they did as a one-off, I think, to begin with. And they do it all the time now. But it's a great, great, great cool beer. If you'd have
fantastic.
That in your core range,
Steady Rolling Man from Daya is wonderful,
yeah,
isn't it?
You know,
and it's, I don't see how you can ever get tired of drinking beers like that.
No, absolutely. They're standout, amazing core beers. Yeah, and I think every brewery needs one of those.
Definitely. A couple more questions, Johnny. You know, we're talking about homebrewing right at the top. I'm interested to get advice from brewers about somebody's thinking about getting into homebrewing. You're obviously probably not going to want to suggest they go and buy a can of syrup and a plastic bucket to ferment it in. Where would you start? What advice would you give somebody thinking about getting into homebrewing?
I think there's so many things you can buy as a homebrewer now that weren't available when I first started. What I found was that the lack of things available on the market for what I wanted. I found I was just building things myself. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't an off-the-shelf Blickman, say, you know, the Braumeister, anything along those lines. It just wasn't available. You had to knock your own kit up. But with a huge array of stuff that's available now, I think you just buy the best that your budget can afford. Stainless steel isn't necessarily the be-all and end-all, but it's certainly more durable and it's a lot easier to clean than a plastic.
Yeah.
But there are some plastic fermenters that I've seen that are pressurizable, like conical shapes. Fermentosaurus, I think, is one of them. There's definitely products out there on the market if you do your research, but just don't throw your money willy-nilly expecting the stainless, shiny, expensive, latest gizmo is going to brew you a great beer. I think you need to have the skills to begin with to be able to brew whatever, regardless of the kit you're on, and then the good beers will hopefully come flowing after that.
And how much patience you need? How many times are you going to brew rubbish before you get something tasting half decent?
Bloody hell, that's I think if you're absolutely honest with yourself, that you'll never, as a home brewer, brewing kits, be absolutely 100% happy with the beer. I think you need to go to a proper mash to get the full-on flavours that you're expecting. If you're trying to brew a New England IPA, for example, I don't know of any kits in a tin that you would give you
and that's, of course, that's what everybody wants to brew, isn't it? So that's, not everybody, but...
Well, I keep an eye on what the home brewers are up to on a few forums, just like as a nosy parker, really, and see if I can give some advice along the way every now and again.
Yeah.
There's quite a few Facebook forums that touch on home brewing. But some of the beers that people are brewing, you obviously can't taste them with a picture, but they look the business. You know, they've got that murk, they've got that glow. They're not dark.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They're starting to look amazing.
Okay.
So quite often homebrew would suffer from oxidation. And I think with the invention of uni tanks on the homebrew level, I think there's an SS one that's, is it half a barrel or a barrel?
Right.
Just a proper uni tank pressurizable, you can do everything in that. Great. That's an awesome tool. You shouldn't necessarily jump in on the deep end and get that. You only get that when you know what you're doing with it.
Right.
They're such a useful tool, their uni tank. I wish I'd have more of them.
Nice.
There's a brewery.
Definitely. You're gonna hang on to your smaller kit when you upscale into the new premises?
No, I think we'll probably sell that on, to be honest. Rob, I think it's just gonna take up space. We've got a small pilot 100-litre system anyway, so if we're doing something different, we'll give it a go on that first. But now I think that's gonna find a home for another up and coming brewer.
Nice.
Served us well, and I think
you'll need to have somebody with a pretty big garage though, won't it? That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, it's that funny size, you know, six heck, it's an in between size, but it's a good size to start, especially if you can half brew into it to begin with.
Right.
You're not committing too much investment in each brew.
No.
You haven't got to try and sell it all and be desperately trying to get rid of it. That's probably the worry of the brewery when starting up. Am I going to sell my beer? Who am I going to sell it to? Especially when there's so much out there that's available and not all of it's great. So,
no. Penultimate question, Johnny, is to ask you to give a shout out to a little guy in the beer ecosystem, local to yourselves, that you'd like to mention that maybe our audience can look up the next time they're down your way, you know, throw a bit of business their way, whether it's a brewery, a bottle shop, a pub. Would you like to draw attention to as being a great part of this ecosystem?
Okay. If I'm going to single out a local one, it would have to be the Cornish Pizza Company in St. Agnes.
I like the sound of them already.
They make amazing pizzas. These artisan bases, they, you know, pizza and beer are already a match made in heaven, aren't they?
Absolutely.
But no, Tim's great right now. He's got into craft beer recently. He's invested in a couple of Linde machines.
Oh, nice.
So he's got Pipeline, Verdant and Black Flag on tap.
I don't think I've quite got time to get down there before he closes this evening, but maybe I can do it tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do it. I don't know whether his Linde's are actually working this week because he's kind of doing it more as a takeaway at the moment because of the way things are.
Yeah,
shops quite small.
Yeah.
But he's got a well-stocked beer fridge.
Mm-hmm.
He's always got the latest from us in there. And Verdant and Black Flag and any of the other local craft breweries have sprung up, like Padstow. He's quite a good stock of Padstow in there too. But no, he's been really good for us. If people come to me and try and buy direct, have you got a tap room? Have you got a shop? I'll just always point them his way.
Nice.
And he just takes the time to chat to the customers, find out what they like, give them a little sample, and off they go. Yeah, a great little shop, and not very far away from our tap room as well. So maybe when we set that up, we could do like a deal that you get a pizza from there, delivered up to the tap room, and you can enjoy a beer while you have one of their pizzas. And that might work well. So we'll have a discussion with him about that.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely a symbiotic relationship you can strike up there. That sounds good. Good.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Johnny. Wrap-up question is, what would be your ultimate happy hour? Where would you be, who would you be with, and what would you be drinking?
Right, I was thinking about this all day, and I came up with about three or four different answers, none of which were probably what you were looking for. I think the first one is me being a bit emotional. I'd probably say it'd be with my mum, who died about 14 years ago. It would be nice to go and have a chat with her and for her to drink one of my beers and go, wow, that's actually bloody lovely, that is. So I know she'd be stoked and happy that it's all working out for me.
I'm sure.
So yeah, that'll probably be the ultimate one, but that's a bit, that's just the soft touch side of things. But honestly, I think it'd probably just be with my mates. I love hanging out with my mates. I do a thing, I've been doing it during lockdown as well on a park bench with a mate of mine. We're talking about starting a podcast with it just for a bit of a laugh, but we're probably both so busy that we won't actually get around to doing it. But we take 4 or 5 cans with us and share them and then talk about them, sitting on a park bench, different park bench every week.
I love it.
So, yeah, just tapping into that wino world.
It's awesome. It's a joy to behold, mate. It is. Yeah, definitely.
Well, we're not going to the pub so much, and the beer selection in the pubs around by us isn't amazing. You've got Tribute or Dunbar, the occasional surprise, but it's few and far between getting a decent beer, unless you go to the pizza shop and get your nice bourbon and pipeline on tap there.
Yeah.
But no, I think we just hang out with my mates, just talking absolute nonsense.
On the park bench.
Any of the worst.
Yeah, no, I'm happy with that as an answer. That's definitely, I've not had that before, so that's, I'm really impressed with that.
Yeah, I'm probably not the only one that does it, but maybe the only one that admits to it.
Brilliant. Well, that's been a lot of fun, Johnny. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, you're welcome, mate. Anytime.
I love what you're doing. I'm quite sure you're going to be wildly successful, and I will try and get down to see you at some point. Hopefully, at least I'll see you at Verdant sometime next summer for the rescheduled Little Summer Beer Bash.
Yeah, sure. Well, if you're down for that, then we're not that far away from there, so you can come up to the brewery as well, mate, and have a pint.
That would be brilliant. Coming up in the next few weeks, we have interviews with London Beer Factory, Abyss, and Wander Beyond. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you decide to subscribe to the podcast so you receive each episode automatically every Tuesday morning. If you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends and leave us a review in your podcast app. It really helps others to discover the show. Coming soon from This Week in Craft Beer is a brand new podcast mini-series entitled So You Want to Build a Brewery? But don't worry, there'll be no brewing advice administered here. Instead, we'll be focusing on everything but the brewing, looking at some of the fine details that need to be attended to if you want to build a great business in today's competitive market. We've partnered with some of the most innovative suppliers to the UK craft brewing industry to bring you a short series of episodes, each focused on a specific aspect which can really make a difference to your business. Please subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. Launching on Friday the 28th of August, it's So You Want to Build a Brewery?